lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I didn't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello and welcome to episode number 12, Maximum Attack in Monaco.
Title which took all of 7 minutes to think up.
I'm Scott.
I'm Rick.
And we are the Two Soft Compounds. We will be catching up with Girl in a Pit Lane later on, get her views about the Monaco Grand Prix. But it was, as predicted, a little bit more of an exciting race, a little bit more like it.
It was. We came from Barcelona, which was the snore fest in Barcelona. It really was a dull and horrible race. We came knowing that Ferrari had to do a little bit better, knowing that Mercedes, whatever happened, would be strong, and knowing that out of all of the circuits this year where Red Bull had their best chance, it was probably going to be here. And it almost all worked out. Ferrari, of course, screwed up their strategy again in qualifying. It just flabbergasted me the way they got that call so wrong by... I mean, I understand why they brought Vettel in after his third run, because he'd clipped the wall and they wanted to check for damage. So then they were scrambling around to get him out again to put a decent time up in Quali 3. And at the same time, forgetting that Leclerc was in 13th and was in danger of being on the cusp. And it was Vettel that out-qualified and pushed his teammate out of qualifying. I just thought it was a bizarre decision again from them.
I mean, surely if you're that low down in a place like Monaco, you've got to go again, because it just, you know, the times change so dramatically in that qualifying session. And there's not an awful lot between the times, you know, the first place and the second place. That's probably the closest the Williams will be to pole position for the whole season because of the nature of the lap. So just the fact that, like you say, they've gone, well, you know, we won't send him out again. And he was gobsmacked himself. You could see him get out of the car and he was just shaking his head, wasn't he? It's like when we have a meeting with the boss here, just shaking his head like, what happened there? Like, it was... absolutely crazy, wasn't it? And you know, and even Ferrari were kind of looking and shrugging their shoulders a bit like, oh, I don't know what happened there. And it's, how does a team like Ferrari constantly get this stuff wrong?
Well, that's my thing is that, you know, as a viewer, I'm watching it live along with millions of other people, and we all have our interests and passions about the sport. And you watch it and you think, my missus was there for qualifying, and normally she avoids Formula One like the plague. But she was getting quite into the fact that I was screaming at the TV going, they're not going to get him out. She went, what do you mean? I said, they're not going to get him out in time. Look, the clock's counted down. Leclerc's still in the garage. Look, he's in 12th now. Oh, now he's 13th. They haven't even noticed. You know, if we're noticing things like this, why aren't the team? And that's what I just don't get about this season in Ferrari. Binotto's been around the team for many, many years. Now he's team principal. What is the problem? Is it because he's too hesitant? And he said, right, the buck stops with me, so every major decision I have to approve. In which case, they go to him and say, we need to do this, and he's too hesitant then. Does he go in, oh, hang on a minute, right, let me have a think. Or is he making the shots and the strategist is not? Is he overruling? What's going on? Because they need to sort it out. It's becoming quite embarrassing, I think.
If you look as well at the Ferrari bosses as an outsider, this is my point of view, like looking at them as their personalities that we're seeing through the TV. For me, Binotto seems too nice, too friendly, too laid back. I think a lot of people in the team wanted him to be the team boss, and that's probably why, because they knew, oh, he won't have a go at us. He'll be chilled. He'll be, you know, the guy they had before was too far the other way, too angry, too aggressive, too slamming his fist down and getting angry. And then you had Domenicali, who for me was a lovely little mixture of the two, where he was a nice guy to interview, very friendly, very Italian, you know, very had the flair and all that, but would also be a bit angry should he need to be. And I think, if you're going to get a boss, particularly for a team like that, I think that's the sort of personality you need. Too nice is no good. Too angry is no good. You need a nice mixture. And you need, I think this is where Toto Wolff is a great boss. And Christian Horner to an extent as well. But Toto Wolff for me is like the perfect all-round boss. Something will happen that annoys him. Maybe they crashed, you know, when they crashed into each other in Spain a couple of years ago, whatever it was. He was angry. He's smashing his fist on the table. He was really angry. By the time they interviewed him on the TV, he was Mr. Calm, and he said, you know, let's not jump to conclusions. We need to look over this. We need to see what went wrong. We need to speak to the drivers. And he completely level-headed already. And that's what you need to be. He's never, ever going to say anything that will make the team look bad or make a driver look bad. He's very clever, Toto. And I think with Ferrari, I just think that, have they got the wrong people in the wrong places? I mean, it's like football, though, isn't it? You can't say, well, fire him because he's had six races. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. But there's, like you said, there's a fundamental issue that at the end of the day, he's the top of the tree. It stops at him.
Let's talk about Mercedes for a little bit. You know, obviously, Hamilton led from start to finish. He's now second on the all-time start to finish leading of a race behind Senna, just two behind Senna on that particular stat. Good start, managed to hold off Verstappen and Bottas at the start of the race, and then from there it was all about, well, really managing the tyres, and then they made that decision to put him on mediums for the remaining 68 laps of the race when they're designed to last 50. And from the start, he's making those radio calls going, this is the wrong decision. I'm not entirely sure whether that wasn't to create a bit of drama, and those radio calls were either to try and bluff the teams around him or whether he was genuinely suffering with tyre wear, because he was calling that quite early, in my opinion. So I don't know about that. But I also think there was a strong possibility of rain, which never came. Safety cars are always a possibility. So maybe they were gambling on the fact that they were going to be pitting again before the end of the race. Didn't work out like that. And he drove a really good race to hold off Max. I heard a rumour that Max Verstappen was in the wrong engine torque mode for the second part of the race, which is strange. So that's why we didn't see him make too many lunges at Hamilton, just a couple, I think, in the closing stages. Yeah, it was an interesting race from Mercedes' point of view. Nice to see them not get a 1-2, I think.
Yeah, and also your theory of, you know, was that a bit dramatic? There's a video, I think it was on the Mercedes F1 Twitter, and it's they're interviewing the engineers and stuff like that, and they're like, you know, what's Lewis going to say when he comes in for the debrief? And the engineer even is kind of like, well, you know, hopefully he's not going to be too angry at me, and hopefully he'll come in and we'll have a little bit of an argument and then we'll move on. And then Lewis comes in with his champagne and sprays him, and he's like, whoa, this is for keeping me on hard tyres or medium tyres for 68 laps. And it all looked a bit, you know.
Have they staged?
Yeah, and yeah, I thought, is that either, have they staged that, or have they done that because they want to make Lewis look more approachable and that kind of stuff? So you could, there could be something in that. It's quite interesting. And I saw a tweet as well over the weekend from Gary Lineker actually saying Lewis Hamilton is dangerously getting close to the greatest of all time. And, you know, we've had this conversation before on this, haven't we, where for me it's not, he's, you know, it's Senna for me, and I think Jim Clark, and, you know, there's four or five names I could give you above Lewis Hamilton, but I do think he is getting up there. My gut feeling tells me he's obviously going to win the title this year, I think, unless Bottas does something really special. And then I think, you know, it's one more to level with Schumacher. And I can see, he always says I'm not worried about numbers and stuff like that, but I can see if he levels with Schumacher, I think he's going to want to go one better.
Yeah.
And in theory, on paper, he is then the greatest of all time.
Furious, but not fast.
Yeah, I think this has to be Charles Leclerc, doesn't it? Well, between him and Lance Stroll. Stroll's not performing this season. Really bad qualification throughout the year so far. But Leclerc, I mean, he said it on Saturday. He said with a really disappointing call that Ferrari made and not getting him out to qualify properly, he was going to have to get his elbows out in the race. And it was kind of, he was kind of saying, you know, you overtake or you put it in the wall. That was his attitude. And that's pretty much what happened come race day.
One of each.
I just thought, you know, we've seen him so far this season. We saw him in Bahrain almost win that race, and I'm not sure if he's prone to throwing his toys out of the pram, but I'm starting to see his immaturity in Monaco a little bit. You know, he knew he had nothing to lose, so he was going to get his elbows out and have a go. Fine, good. But I just got the impression that he was in sulk mode all weekend. Ooh. And you can understand that, by the way. He was going for space that wasn't there. It seemed a bit desperate to me.
Yeah, frustrated is a word I'd use. Yeah. He, like you say, he's obviously a great driver. He reminds me a lot of Max when Max first turned up in the Red Bull, where Max is kind of an unbelievable driver but would make some crazy lunges and some crazy moves. And he's kind of got his head together and gone, OK, let's play the long game a bit here. And I don't know if it's his dad or if his management team or the Red Bull team or just people around him, but someone's kind of slowed him down and matured him a bit. And he's become a very good driver very quickly and a very sensible driver that's still fast and still makes a lunge when he gets a chance. Leclerc, for me, has got the ability to be that person. But like you say, I think he's lunging too much at the moment. And he's I think he feels like he needs to prove himself too much. He's like, you know, if I don't prove myself this season, they'll get rid of me. And I need that to not be the case. But I think he needs to calm down and realise that actually, no, they won't. You know, they've got no better options. If anything, Vettel's going to leave that team, not him, in my opinion. When his time comes, it will come.
Canada could be that time, because that's where Ferrari are traditionally fast. And if Leclerc comes into it with a level head, then it could be a great weekend for him. Could we talk about our competition?
Oh, yes. This is
very,
very
important competition. Very exciting competition. This is designed to get us more Twitter followers. no other reason. So have a look at our Twitter feed, which is 2 Soft Compounds. or at Two Soft Compounds. Rich Energy sponsor the Haas team. And you can't buy a can of Rich Energy in the shops. And there was all kinds of rumours when they started to become their main sponsor as to, well, what is this company and why can't we pop down to our corner shop and buy a can? Well, we've secured a case of Rich Energy drink. And remember, they lost a court case a couple of weeks ago, which means that they're going to have to be forced by law to change their logo. We have Rich Energy drink with the original logo. This could be worth literally pounds if you keep it unopened for the next 16 years. So if you would like to win a can of Rich Energy, all you have to do is follow at Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and retweet the competition tweet that you'll see up there, which is a video of me and Scott. Retweet it with a comment, please. And whoever does that will be put into a draw to win a can of Rich Energy, and we'll even pay the postage.
Wow, we're out of control.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds.
Two Soft Compounds, it's Scott and Rick, and of course we're talking about the Monaco Grand Prix. And we have with us now, we've spoken to her before, it's Girl in the Pit Lane. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Yes, not too bad, thank you.
Excellent. So what were your initial thoughts of the Monaco Grand Prix?
It wasn't as boring as I thought it would be.
See, we said this last week. We were hoping, I had a feeling that this was going to be a Grand Prix with a few surprises, a few changes, because normally this is traditionally a very boring one. So I said last week on the podcast, I just feel like this is going to be a little bit exciting for some reason. I don't know why.
It was. I mean, it wasn't, I'm not going to say, oh my God, it was the best race ever. Let's face it, it's Monaco and it's a bit of a procession. But it definitely had some twists that we weren't expecting.
We will come to those twists in a second. I want to ask you as well, did you see, because I know you're a fan of pink cars, did you see the moment with Perez when he was coming out the pit lane and he almost hit the marshal?
I saw it after. Was it him or was that Sainz? Because I saw onboard footage of Sainz. Was it Sainz? No, it was Perez, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw Perez from his Twitter.
Two marshals on the track.
Yeah, I mean, it looked very scarily close to me. And I just wondered how that even came about, what happened there. But I know you're a big fan of the pink car, so I wanted to ask you if you saw that.
I might have had my head on Twitter at that point, but I did see it afterwards on my Twitter feed. So, yeah, it was pretty scary, and I wouldn't have liked to have been one of those marshals.
Now, I have a theory about the race and Lewis Hamilton. And this is a bit of a conspiracy theory, I suppose. But I have a theory that they knew all along they were going to put him on the medium tyre and it wasn't a mistake. And they kind of used it to ramp up the drama. So Lewis said, OK, well, that's what we'll do. I'll make it look like I'm struggling and I'll get on the radio every two laps and tell you this is a nightmare. But in actual fact, they were more in control than we thought.
That's an interesting theory. And it's a very good conspiracy theory. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Part of me is thinking, oh, maybe, because I hadn't thought of that. So maybe that could have a rumour of truth about it. But I think maybe, because it's Monaco, I think maybe they could have been banking on a safety car. And don't forget, at the beginning of the race, there was a 90% threat of rain. So maybe they were banking on it might rain. So I'm not sure, but I do like your theory.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a fantasy theory, to be honest. And I think you're probably right. But, I mean, they put him on those tyres. Pirelli say their last 50 laps, he did 68 on them. We know how good he is as a driver. And we know in the closing stages, he was basically, well, he was doing what Bono told him on the radio. He was keeping the gap from the back markers the same as he was between Verstappen behind him. So he was pacing it out and filling the track best he could so Verstappen couldn't get past.
He was definitely, he made that Mercedes wider than it should have been so Verstappen couldn't get past. And I think that's something similar to what he did, I think it was Abu Dhabi in 2016 when he knew he'd lost the world championship to Nico Rosberg and everyone was saying to him on the radio, Lewis, let him pass. No, I haven't won the world championship. I'm going to go as slow as I like. And there was literally a train behind him.
Yeah, that was a very Toys at a Pram Lewis moment, wasn't it? There was another theory that I saw actually online and until I read this, I thought, oh, okay, yeah, that's interesting as well. Why didn't Verstappen slow down and back up into Vettel, give himself kind of 10 seconds in order to get to Lewis, and then on the last couple of laps, just give it some welly and try and catch up by 5 seconds, in which case still getting the second place back because the 5 second penalty. But then, of course, if he did that, you know, would then Vettel try and overtake him and would there be, you know, games there? So it's one of those, isn't it, where, you know, there's lots of tactics coming into play, it's hard to pass at Monaco is the bottom line, isn't it?
Very hard to pass at Monaco, but I did see a couple of quite spectacular moves on replays on Twitter over the last couple of days. At the start of the race, I think Lance Stroll overtook a couple of people in front of him, and they were quite good overtakes. And I think someone else did it as well.
And Carlos Sainz as well. I think I remember seeing some onboard footage where he overtook a couple at the start, and that looked amazing as well.
Yeah, Sainz had a good race by all accounts. He really did. What are your feelings on Ferrari? Because I know last time we spoke, it was just after the Bahrain Grand Prix, and since then Ferrari have gone downhill, and we sort of make a terrible strategy call in Barcelona, and now in qualifying for the Monaco Grand Prix, they make a catastrophic call with leaving Vettel in the pits too long, getting him out in the nick of time, and then forgetting all about Charles Leclerc. I mean, it was ridiculous. Charles Leclerc came out of Q3 because he was outqualified by his own teammate. It just seems crazy what's going on there at the moment.
Yes, I think maybe it's Ferrari in meltdown. They're just going from bad to worse. And with we're only six races in to the season, and so far I've already managed to do two special editions of Ferrari funniest tweets because they are just losing it.
Yeah, we had Binotto after the Barcelona Grand Prix said, hang on a minute, everyone's criticising us. I didn't think there was anything wrong with the strategy. And you're like, what the hell? And the thing that frustrated me the most about the Monaco qualifying is me as a fan just watching it on a TV, I'm looking at the screen going, all right, they're just about going to get Vettel out here, but where's Leclerc? If they don't put Leclerc out, the chances are he's going to lose out here and not progress to Q2. Now, if I can see that as a layman, why can't the Ferrari team see that on the pit wall with the 52 other data streams they have at their disposal?
I have no idea. But yes, I think everybody on Twitter on Saturday afternoon could see that. The only people that couldn't see that were, like you say, the Ferrari pit wall. You're like, really?
I was watching the Channel 4 coverage over the weekend as well, and they were...
Oh, bless you.
I know. Yeah, it was painful. It was very painful. But we got through it. They were speculating, though, that about Vettel basically saying, you know, has he had his day, basically? He did a little piece to camera with Lee McKenzie and was basically saying, I've got other interests, I've got other hobbies, I've got, you know, I can make money other ways. And it was very interesting that he was talking like he was thinking of retirement. He was talking like he was thinking of moving on. Whether he's going to do that anytime soon. And they were speculating, you know, he's had a child, I think, recently. And has that slowed him down? Has that taken his edge off? Has he gone, look, I've won four world titles. I tried to win one with Ferrari. It's not happening. Maybe it's time I move on. I mean, he's still a very, very young guy. But it's just interesting that I do agree. He's kind of lost some sort of edge, I think, in the last couple of years.
Yeah, he has. I mean, this season, I mean, he was the beginning of last season when it was him and Lewis fighting and it was swinging, pendulum swinging. It was fantastic. But since the summer break last year, I don't know what's happened. But this season, I've noticed, and I think he seems to have gone off the boil. And I don't know if it's because of whether there's internal wranglings at Ferrari, whether he's kind of, like you say, oh, I really don't want to do this anymore, and I don't know what to do. But it just seems like he has gone off the boil this season, especially.
Just before we end our conversation, you told us earlier in the season that you were doing something on your blog which involved baking a different foodstuff for each Grand Prix. What did you do for Monaco?
I did a galapien, which is yes, I know, pardon. it's a cherry almond and cantaloupe melon tart, which was first created in 1994, if I remember rightly, by someone, Alain Bouchard, I think, in the Apt region of France. So it's not strictly Monégasque, but I thought, God, it's close enough.
That'll do for us.
You had me at tart.
And because, I mean, candied cantaloupe melon is not easy to get in your local supermarket in the UK, so I swapped it out for apricot halves, and it went down very well at home. My dad really enjoyed it.
Very nice. Well, listen, just before we let you go, Canadian Grand Prix is next. This one should be a strong circuit for Ferrari. If it's not, would you agree with me that their season's over?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think it's last time we spoke, it was only a couple of races in. Mercedes were looking very strong. With six races in now, they've done pretty much one, two in the last six races. So I think if Ferrari don't get their act together, then it's over. Heart is over for the year.
Good to have you on again. And just remind us again where we can find you on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at pitlane_girl, or you can follow my YouTube channel, which is Girl in the Pit Lane.
Two Soft Compounds.
I'd just like to say a quick hello to Mike Scott. I was at a party on Sunday and he says he listens to the Two Soft Compounds podcast every Wednesday on his way to work.
Hello, Mike Scott.
And you know what he does? He's a surgeon. He listens to us and then literally saves lives. That's the influence we have, Scott.
Is that a wise thing to do, though, listening to us and then going to save lives?
I'm not sure.
Maybe you should save the lives and then listen to us when he's saved the lives.
Maybe. Listen, I'd like to talk about the rookies a little bit. My opinion of the rookies has changed as the season's gone on, and the one I am championing now is Albon. I just think, what a mature young man. When he's interviewed on the TV, he comes across like a true gentleman. He's got a really old head on young shoulders. Some of the moves he's made, and he's quietly chipped away at his career, almost in the background, but has done really well. Qualification for Monaco was brilliant. He had a decent race as well. I think he's brilliant. Norris, in the meantime, has kind of faded into the background a little bit, but obviously is still a big talent to look out for in the future.
Yeah, I agree, actually, with Albon. I'd never heard of him before he came up to the team, and then here he is, and I'm like, well, like you say, great little driver, very mature. The one I feel sorry for is George Russell, because you look back at his history, his previous career, and he's a great driver. He's beat a lot of these guys that he's around now. He's had some big success in his early career. And, you know, that Williams is just horrible, isn't it? It really is horrible. And also, it's quite sad to see Kubica as well, because it's, you know, it's his big comeback. And he was a great driver, you know, back in the day. And obviously, he had his accident in the rallying and, you know, he's had the operations to his hand and stuff like that. His comeback, this was his big comeback. With that car, you just can't look at either of their talents and say, yeah, you know, he's going to do great one day or whatever. For George Russell, you think, well, we now need to see him in a better car to see how good he is.
Yeah.
And the same with Kubica. Are people going to say, well, you know, since the accident, he wasn't the same, or is it the car? It's just a shame.
A real shame about Kubica, and he was on the radio during the Monaco Grand Prix, and it was the first crack I heard from him, being the consummate professional that he is, when he got on the radio and went, listen, I know what I'm doing, you don't have to tell me. And it was kind of like that sort of sense of desperation that you felt with that, and I feel really quite sorry for him. The best of the rest, though, this weekend, there's a great little stat going on. Oh, and by the way, Nicky, our stat man, will be back for next week's episode when we preview the Canadian Grand Prix. Is away at the moment. But anyway, there's a nice little chart that's going on at the moment, which is you take out the top three teams. You take out Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull, and then have a look at the individual drivers and how they would be doing if those top three teams weren't there. And it's Kevin Magnussen that is leading the points table on the best of the rest. And he's had a really good season so far. We knew Haas were going to be strong. I actually thought they would be a bit stronger than they have been. But he's doing very well. Carlos Sainz, Norris, they're all up there. And so's Albon, who I think occupies the fifth slot of drivers not in a top three team. So interesting stat. Have a look for those sort of things on Twitter. And if you follow at Lights Out, even though Nicky's not with us, you'll see some fantastic stats and facts on his blog.
Driver of the Week.
So obviously, driver of the week this week, a lot of people are going to say Hamilton because of what he did on the tyres. But like you've said, was that legit or was that a bit of drama? And for me, that's a little bit boring. A lot of people will say Leclerc was trying to do what he was trying to do, you know. But again, for me, just too crazy a drive to sort of give him driver of the week. So I think you've got to go for me, for Verstappen, to be fair. He had a little lunge, didn't he? He had a go. And he was the only driver that looked particularly special in those circumstances. I think, like I say, Hamilton did a good job to keep them all behind. But for me, it was Verstappen for the driver of the week, I think.
You look at that drive from Verstappen last year. If that had been Verstappen in that situation, he almost certainly would have taken himself and Lewis out of the race. This year, there's more of a maturity. There's definitely been a change over the winter break between his attitude, and I think it's just showing in leaps and bounds this year. So that was a great element of chasing in second place, that he managed to keep his cool, hold his head, and I think that bodes well for the rest of the season for him.
Leaving screeching skid marks all over the place. Two Soft Compounds.
Right then, so the next Grand Prix is Canada, of course. A lot of the drivers like Canada. They like the circuit. There's been some great races there. We had the great victory with Jenson Button in the rain there as well. It was the longest race ever, wasn't it? That
5.5 hours.
Yeah. Even I couldn't put up with Channel 4's coverage for that long. thank God it's highlights. But we'll be back next week and we'll be looking at the Canadian Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's a circuit I really like as a viewer. I think it provides a mixture of traditional circuit style and street circuit, because the walls are there and close and will catch you out. Ferrari traditionally go well here. So do Red Bull, actually. Loads of long, fast straights, but also some very slow corners and some decent overtaking opportunities.
So we will see you back here. And don't forget to check us out. You can win that lovely can of drink, the rich energy drink, by retweeting our tweet. You'll see at Two Soft Compounds. You can find us at twosoftcompounds.com as well. Thank you for listening this week, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.